This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
This episode comes from my archives. For the most current episodes, please go to germwarfare.com.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Scott Adams, thank you for joining me in the trenches again.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's been a few years since we last did this. I think we chatted right at the beginning of the, I like to call it the COVID era. A lot has happened since.
Yes, a lot has happened since. that would be an understatement.
Well, firstly, the COVID event. I mean, that is what it was, an event. Like 9/11, it was one of the biggest events, I think, in living memory. Just how the world changed. It became everything flipped, turned upside down, didn't it?
Well, everything probably changed, but in all unpredictable ways. Mm. One of the things Naval Ravikant, he's one of our smartest Americans, one of the things he said was that the pandemic would accelerate things that were going to happen anyway, which is a real interesting way to understand it. So, for example, we were going to get more home delivery of stuff. Yeah, we were probably going to move our manufacturing to America, or at least there was a movement to do that, and that probably sped it up, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You could kind of go down right down the list as things that look like they probably were going to happen, but they happened faster. But then on top of that, are a whole bunch of things that nobody wanted to happen, such as under-tested vaccinations and, you know, every one of our professionals lying. But, you know, the most useful thing we got out of the pandemic, you know, it always takes, you know, a century before you realize what happened to you. The thing is, a complete lack of trust in our experts came out of the pandemic in a way that really nothing else could have done. You know, it's not like I could have done a documentary. Hey, have you noticed that our experts are not dependable? You know, nobody would watch it. But when the entire world watches all of our experts apparently either not knowing their jobs or lying to us to protect their incomes, then why would you believe the next thing they say? I'll tell you one of the biggest changes, and this is purely observational, there's no science behind it, but to me it seems that all the steam came out of the climate change crisis after the pandemic, because the entire argument about climate change is, you fools, don't you understand that 97% of experts are all on the same page? And then you live through the pandemic, and that doesn't mean anything anymore. It actually went from the most important thing you could say about science, everybody agrees, to having no meaning at all. And it was just the pandemic that gave us that lesson.
It's true what you're saying. I didn't think of it like that, when things that were coming would be accelerated. That is very true.
Yeah. It's one of those, it's a real thinker. You know, that's why Naval is sort of a national treasure, because that's a frame that I never would have in a million years considered. But you could just pick one thing after another and say, oh, yeah, it does look like that was going to happen eventually. Take remote work. I mean, you can really almost just throw a dart at anything and you go, oh, yeah, there's definitely more of that happening at the moment. It makes me wonder if that's just always the case. You know, if you have a world war, it accelerates a lot of stuff that maybe was going to happen on its own, technical development especially. So maybe that's just always the case. A big shock makes you do the things you needed to do, but maybe you were just, you know, ossified and a little bit of stock and you needed an emergency to change it. Let me give you a real good example of that. This will be a fun one. Before the pandemic, it was illegal to call a doctor on the phone if the doctor operated in another state where they were not licensed or certified, whatever it is. And when the pandemic happened, one of the things about Trump's administration, which I'm always in awe of, actually, the first administration, is that he was so connected to the public that he just put out the call, do you have any good ideas of what I should do an executive order for? Now, it wasn't that he didn't know what to do. He just thought, well, I'll just scan my smart people. And he basically had his smart people find the other smart people. Like, literally, that's what happened. Go find the smart people and see what I should be doing that I haven't thought of already, basically. And one of those people got to me because I talk in public and, you know, talk about new ideas all the time. And I'd been working on a startup on the side, which I'd learned about this problem with the doctors across borders. And so I suggested that, hey, do an executive order to make it legal during the pandemic, at least, to talk to your doctor anyway. And then telemarketing could flourish because you're going to want to not go to your doctor in person if you have, you know, COVID. So sure enough, within, I think, an hour, I heard that the White House looked at the idea and said yes. Yes, meaning they're going to show it to the boss. And then I think within a week or two, Trump signed it and it became the law of the land. Now, that was literally me accelerating a trend that I think would have had to happen. Just the fact that you're going to run out of doctors, it's just really a good way to, you know, find a doctor anywhere, anytime that you need. It was going to happen. You know, sooner or later it was going to happen. And I just happened to be in the middle of accelerating that. So yeah, it was probably everything accelerated.
But you make it sound like it was a good thing, or am I misreading that?
I don't want to say it's a good thing because it depends how you net it out. If you lost your grandma, it's a very, very bad thing. And
yeah,
when we all suffered for more than 2 years and that was nothing but bad and the kids were injured, et cetera. So I don't want to net it out. But if you're just going to be analytical and say, what did it do to all these trends? They probably were things we wanted to do, and it would have been hard to do unless there was an emergency. The doctors across state borders is a perfect example. As soon as it was the context of an emergency, the president just said, well, yes. why wouldn't you do this smart thing? Just because the AMA or, I don't know, somebody else might object. You say, if it's smart, we do it. It's an emergency.
An interesting paradox, though, is here on the African continent, because of our history, people generally have a very healthy suspicion of the state. And that, of course, leads to all sorts of pros and cons. So in that sense, there was no acceleration. But internationally, there certainly was an acceleration in that suspicion.
Yeah, you started from a good base of not trusting anything in the first place. I'm glad we finally caught up to you. It took us a while.
We have to lead in something.
speaking of that, you know, suspicion, I have to show you something I was just doing in my man cave. I've got a whiteboard in there. I like put my ideas together for my own subscription people. And I was trying to figure out, let's see if I can put this. I won't talk about it in detail, but I was trying to figure out how the real world works. Like, how does our government actually work? And nowhere on here do I have, like, the president.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQBAR products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Right? It just sort of wasn't necessary to talk about our elected leaders when I was talking about how the actual government performs. You know, it's some weird octopus blob thing going on. I don't know what's... But I know I don't trust any of it. that part I know.
That's a very interesting point, though, because a lot of people during the COVID era have what you would call woken up. They've pulled back the curtain on a lot of nefarious behavior, which otherwise would have been ignored.
Yeah. In America, in fact, it was my morning show this morning, was all of our federal agencies are corrupt. And you think to yourself, well, the regulators might be a little bit captured, but, not totally captured. So, maybe it sort of works. But once you start looking under the hood, it's completely corrupt from top to bottom. And there's nothing that works. We have a competence crisis with a massive corruption problem everywhere.
And also, I mean, as an outsider, obviously, the U.S. is not looked upon with friendly eyes these days, particularly when you consider what happened in Ukraine.
Yeah. Speaking of waking up, I'm of the generation when we were raised and our history books told us, those other countries, they got a lot of problems, but thank God America's, virtuous and we've got a moral path and we're like the protectors of the world. And if you've got a war, we'll come and save you because that's what we do. And we don't even ask anything in return. That's who we are. We don't even ask for anything in return. Can we help you? Is there something we can do for you? Mm-hmm. And I was actually born and raised thinking that that was the model of the world. And I felt sorry for those other suckers in those other corrupt countries where they're... And then I was taught that the other countries lie to their citizens. I go, damn, I'm so happy I don't live in one of those countries.
Can you imagine?
And, once you start understanding how anything works in the real world, I worked in big corporations for a long time before I was doing the cartooning thing. And I was the person who was the liar. And somehow I didn't generalize that. I just thought it was my own little weird situation. Now, what I mean by that is it was my job to do financial projections. So I'd say, is it a good idea to upgrade this data center or whatever? But all that really mattered was, did my boss want to upgrade the data center? That's all that mattered. Because if yes, I could give him numbers that said it was the greatest idea ever. If no, well, maybe the analysis would go the other way. And if anybody asked me, what would I say? Would I say that my assumptions are always the only thing that moves the analysis? No. I would say, how could you doubt me? It's right here on this document. Look at this data. These columns add up. I mean, they add up. People, listen to me. I'm using math. Now you're questioning math. I would give them that. Not exactly that, but you get the point.
You said before the cartoon thing and you created my segue for me. I've got a pile of your books behind me. I'm worried, Scott, that I'm not going to be able to get any more of them.
Well, you should be worried. My 50 or so books that were in circulation, which mostly is Dilbert reprint books, but there were a dozen or so that were, non-Dilbert books. And they all got canceled worldwide. And every newspaper worldwide got canceled. Now, you're probably saying to yourself, how does that happen? Is that wokeness? Would you like me to describe how that really happened in the real world? Well, I showed you the picture. Here's the real world. And the real world, the Atlantic Council, I'll just give you the broad brush. There's this group called the Atlantic Council, which is basically a CIA cutout. And they use George Soros as their bank. And he funds these international organizations that you think are just trying to do well. But they do things like open borders and they censor populists. Now, I would be somebody who would be identified as one of those damn populists who wants the people's opinion to have a larger role than the people behind the curtain. And so I would be on a list with, let's say, every person who got canceled. You know, I don't know how well you know the American voices, but you can go down the list, and the sort of more effective voices for Trump got systematically, economically destroyed. Now, my cancellation started with a newspaper called the Washington Post. In the cartoon world, they were the big one, you know, the biggest newspaper. They had lots of comics. And in the news world, they would be one of the few entities called newsmakers, meaning if they say it's news, then everybody says, well, I guess we got to cover this. You know, one of those big guys says it's news. So they have an unusual level of control. And they're also well understood to be a CIA vehicle.
Yeah.
So now a CIA vehicle in the context of, we know this is not a conspiracy, it's well understood, that a number of people have been targeted for censorship on the social media platforms. My YouTube show has had almost exactly the same traffic for years. There isn't the slightest chance in the world it's not capped. You know, as my number of subscribers was zooming, you know, you'd think that would be at least roughly correlated with viewership. Nope. Same every time. So I'm almost certain that, you know, if you get the Washington Post to cancel you, then the other newspapers kind of have to go along, especially since they accompanied it with the story of my bad behavior. Now, here's what I got canceled for. I complained that I was being discriminated against. Now, you didn't hear that, did you? Because they leave the context out. If you take the context out and you just see the ranting part, which everybody saw, the unmistakable conclusion is, I said I don't like black people. Nothing like that happened in the real world. And indeed, I love black people. Like, you know, if you look at my entire history of all, you know, human interaction, all positive. Never had a bad, I don't think I've ever had a bad interaction with a black human being. But somehow that turned into that. Now, here's what I did say. I did say in the context of DEI and CRT, I don't know if those things mean anything to your audience.
Critical race theory and BLM, et cetera.
Yeah. But the way it's unrolled in America anyway, is the idea that white people are oppressors. And even if they weren't directly involved with any slavery or oppressing, they still are the beneficiaries of it. And so, to summarize, they have your money and you should get it from them. They also have the jobs you should have, and they should be denied those jobs until you've caught up to some kind of balance. Now, if you find yourself in a situation where the official policy of where you live, whether it's your company or your government, in this case, both.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Is that you are a bad person because of your skin color.
Yeah.
Not because of anything you've done. Literally your demographic. And even though you had nothing to do with it, it would be fair and just and equitable to take some of your money, some of your opportunity, and to move it to other people. Now, what I said is, if you find yourself in that situation, I'll take the swearing out, you should get the F out of there. Now, that applies to every situation everywhere. If you find yourself surrounded by people who want to take your stuff, and they're actively working toward doing it, and they've even justified it in some what they would call a moral and an ethical framework, get out of there. You need to get out. Now, what you do after that is up to you, but first escape. I mean, it's sort of a, you know, that's your first instinct. Now, is that practical? Well, not really. Not really. It was meant as hyperbole. and it was meant to wake people up that it's not a cost-free path to take money from one group and give it to the other. The group that's losing the money is going to complain, and they're going to be loud about it, and it's going to get noisy, and I got canceled for that. Now, if you say to yourself, but Scott, it's the way you said it, and you know, you were trying to be provocative. You knew you'd get canceled and all that. You could talk about all those things, but I'll bet I wouldn't have been canceled, except that I support a populist and everybody who does gets canceled for something, coincidentally. So yeah. My assumption is, and I call this a working assumption. That's a concept I like to use a lot. If you don't know the truth and you don't have a way to find the truth, the working assumption is whatever makes the most sense. So my working assumption is that my situation is identical to all the others, which were clearly the intelligence people and the Democrats trying to get rid of populists, because they, in this particular case, they would be on the same side. The populists are the people who want to look behind the curtain. And the group that wants to cancel you is the ones who are behind the curtain. So it makes perfect sense.
But it also... It's easy to understand why so many newspapers would pull the plug, because here in South Africa, we don't really have syndicates, but a syndicate is essentially where that bottleneck occurs. So right. If they say cheers, then it's game over.
So here's how the effect can work. This is just hypothetical. I'm not saying this specifically happened. The CIA goes to the Washington Post and says, you know, there's this thing we want. Now, they don't have to say or else. It's the CIA, and they know that they get their tips from the CIA, and they know that sometimes there might be some business obstacle that needs to be removed for them to remain profitable, and wouldn't it be good if the government was friendly with you? So they don't have to blackmail you. They just have to say who they are and what they like. Then if the Washington Post decides to cancel you, the syndication company knows that, you know, they're the most important customer. Literally the most important customer in the comic business. And the syndicate is going to be, well, do I lose all of my business with this big entity, which would ripple through all of my other customers? Or do I get rid of this one thing and just sort of make this problem go away? So I was never mad at my publisher or syndicator, because they were responding to ordinary business pressures, and they have a fiduciary responsibility to their, you know, stockholders and owners, whatever. And so I thought every one of them operated in a perfectly legitimate business fashion. So I don't have any complaint with them. It's just that some chain of cause and effect was set up that had an inevitable impact of canceling me completely. Now, I am reintroducing my books independently. So my book, Reframe Your Brain, is available for Americans. I'm not sure if you can get it on Amazon where you are, probably not. And it's only in one language right now. And I've reintroduced How to Fail Almost Everything and Still Win Big, my big classic.
I've got that book, thankfully. So I don't have to worry about not finding it in the future.
Well, it might be worth more in the future. There won't be any more of those. We have a second edition for Americans, at least off of Amazon.
I know that you still draw Dilbert, but it's taken up a different kind of life. It's behind a paywall. Why do you still draw Dilbert? Do you still enjoy it?
Well, here's the thing. I hated doing it before I was canceled, because I had to draw something that would fit the sensibilities of a 1960s newspaper, because nothing changed in terms of what was appropriate in newspapers from the 60s, because it's a family vehicle. So if it wasn't okay for a six-year-old, or let's say somebody who could read a 10-year-old, it just wasn't okay. Just couldn't be in a newspaper. And there's a lot of stuff that the business world does that we could all talk about in a news sense that you couldn't put in a comic, because it's not quite ready for kids. You know, like anything with DEI or any of that would be inappropriate. So as soon as I was canceled, I went from, God, I wish I could retire, but they keep paying me too much. So I can't, literally, that's what it was. I was like, I really don't want to do this. I don't want to draw this one more time. I really, really, really want to retire. But how am I going to retire if they're paying me all this money? So they took the money away. And then I thought, oh, well, I guess I could just stop doing it, because I always wanted to stop doing it, but it was only the money. And then I thought, wait a minute. if I keep doing it, for the first time, I can do what I want. I just have to do it behind a paywall. So I, you know, my locals community, scottadams.locals.com, is subscribers who see that, plus my edgy political stuff and some other cartoons that are not public. Or on the X platform, they can see just the comic for $3 a month. And I can just go wild. So I don't think I did a single comic, maybe two comics this whole month, because I still do it every day. I never missed a day. Probably only two of them would have been allowed in newspapers. And yet, none of them are inappropriate for an adult. There's literally nothing that I couldn't say out loud in public in a news format for adults. But it just makes my job so much fun. So it went from, my God, can I stop doing this, to some kind of a creative rebirth where I got to do the thing I wanted for the first time, but I had all the skills and, you know, abilities that I'd developed over a career. It was an artist's ideal situation. Now, I didn't engineer it to be that way. It was luck or bad luck that just worked out, I guess. But, oh my God, if I had a way to script my own exit from the normal public life, I would have done it just like that. But, you know, I didn't plan it. It just worked out that way. I'm always of the belief that when things just completely fall apart, that every time it creates an opportunity. You know, that's not just one of those things you put on a bumper sticker. You know, when God closes one door, he opens another. It's just literally the way everything works. You know, if you just blow something up, somebody's going to get paid to clean it up, right? So there's always an opportunity. It just can't not happen, I think. I think it's just built into the nature of reality. So I saw the opportunity and just walked through the door, and it's been great. Now, clarification, I still write and draw the comic every day, but I have a director of art who does the finished art. My hand's a little fried after 35 years of drawing. So I can do the rough, but I wouldn't have the fine motor control to give you the finished product right now. So I have somebody who's better than me to do that.
That's interesting, Scott. When did that start happening?
Well, it's not uncommon. It's for people who use the same fine motor skills. You know, it happens to musicians. There's a name for it. It's a focal dystonia. Specifically, what happens is my pinky starts to flex only in the situation where I put a pen to paper or stylus to screen. But my hand is perfect. There's nothing wrong physically. If you did an x-ray, there'd be nothing wrong. It's 100%. It's in my brain. The brain actually removes from your hand's ability to do the thing that hurts it. Now, I don't know if it conceives of it that way, but that's the net effect. I lost my voice for 3 years for the same reason.
Yeah, I remember that.
And by the way, those are the same problem. The hand and the voice are both cases where if you overuse a fine muscle, vocal cords in one case and the hand in another case, your brain will take it away from you. So both the vocal cord problem, where I couldn't really speak well for 3.5 years until some surgery, that's what that little scar is, and then the hand problem, both in the brain and not in the hand, and not in the vocal cords.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you hear that sort of personal artifact, it makes sense. I mean, you've drawn what? How many thousands of Dilberts? I want to say 15,000.
Oh, that's a pretty good guess. I was going to say 11,000 to 12,000.
Would that be published?
Published.
Okay, so you've probably drawn more.
Well, yeah, that would be published in all forms. So I think the 12,000 would be published in any form. Yeah, something like that.
That is a really, really good hit rate. It's phenomenal, actually.
And the other thing is that the great thing about being a syndicated cartoonist, in the first year or so, I had an editor who would say, you know, this one's not so good. And I'd say, all right, well, you know more than I do. But after you become big, a professional editor is smart enough to know, okay, whatever you're doing, I wouldn't know how to do because you became big. And if I could teach somebody to do that, I would have done it. But somehow you figured it out. So at that point, the really good editor says, your judgment is better than mine, you know, unless it's completely inappropriate in some way. So I haven't been, I think everything I've drawn for at least 30 years has been published. everything.
I've got a book somewhere here behind me. It's a thick book of basically the history of American comics, and it goes all the way back to essentially the 1800s. And of course, your work features in there much later on in the book, alongside some of the modern classics like Garfield and of course, Pearls Before Swine. Now, I've got a wonderful history of Pearls Before Swine and Dilbert. I remember reading your blog before blogging was popular. I think it was on TypePad or TypeSpot or something like that. Do you remember those days? I don't know, it was early 2000s or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you featured this comic strip. I don't remember the story anymore, but you featured this comic strip with a pig and a zebra and whatever. And it was by a guy called Stefan Pastis. And after that comic featured on your blog, I think he got syndicated. And I think he's still syndicated today.
Oh, yeah. Not only is he still syndicated, he's one of the big names in the business. And he even started a very successful children's book series called Timmy Failure.
Yeah.
A number of those. Yeah, the syndication company I was working with also had a website, and they would put the comics that weren't, in their opinion, publishable, but at least would put it on the website for people who really like to look at comics. They could look at it if they want to. But there was no real money involved. You know, I don't think any. And I happened to see it on the website, and I thought, wait a minute, there's something here. Now, the trick of finding a cartoonist is to identify somebody before they're actually good. Like, that's how I was spotted. If you looked at my first comics, you would laugh at how bad they were. But there was a professional editor, Sarah Gillespie, who looked at it and said, yeah, you know, I hear a voice. So what she was able to do is hear the voice first, and then she knew that was something you could build on, and then I did. That's what I saw with Stefan Pastis. I saw the voice first and an intelligence coming through the writing that you don't normally see. And I realized that he could figure out the rest. Now, after I gave him that little boost, he set up a time to talk to me because he lives in California as well. And we got together for a few hours over lunch. And I told him everything that I knew about what works and what doesn't, like the really secret stuff. You know, the stuff you're not going to find in a book, like what's real, what works, how to make a joke. He wrote it down, real smart guy, had been a lawyer up to that point, and he followed all of the advice. I've never seen this.
Sure.
Yet, I can't tell you how many people came to me in my whole career and said, you know, I want to be a cartoonist. I've got this thing. Can you tell me what to do? I gave him the same advice. Only once did somebody take the advice. Stefan Pastis, multimillionaire. Yeah. Successful in at least three realms because he does speaking and stuff as well. Mm. So he's doing great.
For what it's worth, I've taken your advice. I've implemented for years now the idea of systems rather than goals. I always found that to be such a clever way of looking at things.
Yes, for people who don't understand, my book, Had Failed Almost Everything, Still Went Big, 2013. Really influenced most of the success books after that. And the biggest part, there are several things that were influential after that. The biggest parts were systems being better than goals. You know, I somewhat provocatively said goals are for losers, but that's sort of you get your attention. And the idea is that in our fast-moving world, even if you set a goal, unless you can achieve it that afternoon, everything's going to be different. Like, what's your goal in the pre-AI world? Probably doesn't matter because you're going to change your mind in 6 months when everything's different. You're going to say, well, it would make more sense if I moved over here a little bit. So what I say is you should develop systems that prepare you for as many opportunities as possible. Now, going and getting a good college degree that has a wide application is a system. Having a goal of, I am going to be an architect can be good if you're really, really sure and it's all you've ever wanted, you know, it might work out. If you're going to be a lawyer or a doctor, you probably want to have a goal, you know, get through law school, get through. But those are exceptions. Most of us get into the world and we change jobs 12 times and we don't know where we're going to end up. For those situations, you want to build a talent stack, as I say. Combine talents that maybe you're not the best in the world at, but they work really well together. And I'm a good example of that because I'm not the best artist. I'm not even the funniest person in the room half the time. But there aren't many people who can draw a little bit and they're a little bit funny and they have enough, let's say, experience or vision on the world that they can say things you haven't heard before. Very rare. Yeah. I mean, that's why I get to do what I do. It's just very rare. So, but it's also a developed skill. You know, I wasn't born knowing how to write or how to draw. I just worked hard at it, gotten top 10%, 20%, and then you combine them and it's magic. So that's what I tell everybody. Yeah, go with a system that teaches you the most useful things that work together, and then you can go everywhere.
I think one of the most practical applications of that way of thinking is health and fitness. I mean, the idea of a diet is ridiculous. Oh, I'm going to be great when I reach that end point. Okay, what happens next?
Right. Yeah, the diet is the best example. You're right. Because people think there's something called willpower. And willpower is literally imaginary. Yeah, you know, like you can't get a bucket of willpower. There's no part of your brain that's the willpower part. All we have is competing urges. So if you have a goal of eating less and losing weight, what are you going to do if it's willpower? I summon the willpower from the magical realm of willpower, and then it doesn't work. And you're like, well, I don't have a backup plan. I just tried my willpower, and that's all I had. So here's what I say. How about don't keep unhealthy food in your house? That's what I do. No willpower required. If you're hungry enough, you'll eat healthy food. And eventually, here's another system. If you deny yourself sugar for long enough, like the really bad sugary stuff, you lose your taste for it. That's the system. So you're basically training yourself not to want sugar. You're not saying, I'll avoid the sugar. You're just finding alternatives and keeping it out of your house and that sort of thing. So yes, if you set up systems for both exercise and diet, you're going to be in way better shape than just saying, I'll try harder next time. Why is it not working? Make it easy on yourself. Here's another obvious one. Make it a lifetime system to continuously learn how to prepare foods that are healthy for you. Like once you realize that you can steam broccoli and add lemon juice to it, and it becomes like, oh my God, this is like the best thing I've ever eaten today. And if you don't know that broccoli can either be horrible if you do everything wrong or a delicacy, that's information. So my diet system is to make sure that your information is up to where it needs to be, not some goal about your pounds you lose. Let me use myself as an example. I'm currently at my ideal adult weight, like exactly the one I would pick if I could just pick. I put no effort into it, none. And it's not natural. You know, it's not like a family thing that we're all skinny or something. It's the opposite. And it's just that the system is good. I just don't expose myself to the temptation and then I don't have to worry about it.
I struggled to get my wife to eat Brussels sprouts. Have you got a trick?
Brussels sprouts is all about, here's the trick. You got to cut them in half. But by the way, how you cut vegetables will completely change your experience of them. If you take cauliflower and try to eat like a little, you know, like cauliflower, it's horrible. But you can take the same raw cauliflower, slice it thin, put a little salt and pepper on a breadboard and just sort of smush it in. And then you eat it. It would be like the best potato chip you ever had. Now, it might be too much salt. That's a separate question. But the shape of things, you'll find over and over again, the shape actually changes your experience. I think I was going to say something else about that.
About Brussels sprouts.
Oh, Brussels sprouts. Cut them in half. And you're looking to sort of really cook them up in olive oil and maybe add some lots of garlic and onion if she likes those things, and you got to get it so it's like really, you know, almost overcooked for a little bit of it, and it's a little salt and pepper. If she doesn't like that, well, I don't know what to say. You might need a new wife.
Earlier you mentioned AI. I have to ask you your thoughts on that. I don't know what to make of AI yet. Everybody's got extremely polarizing views. Elon has expressed concern. What do you make of it?
I think we'll be fine. But I certainly understand why people can say, given there's so much uncertainty and we'll be unlocking immense power, that those things alone should make you get really, really religious about doing it right. So, but I think we will. So there's a misunderstanding that the public has, I think. They think that our current versions, if we keep training and improving them, that they'll become the super intelligence that we worry about having too much power over us, I guess. But the super intelligence, the so-called AGI, we don't know how to make that, meaning nobody knows how to make it. We know how to make the current version a better version of that, but we don't know how to jump that leap to like a serious AI that's just indistinguishable from a genius person. So the current LLMs, they lie, they hallucinate. Mm. I don't know that that's going to get fixed. They're biased, they're prejudiced. And every time I try to use one, because I try to, you know, keep up with things so I can talk about them and maybe, you know, change the way I do business, I've tried a bunch of AI apps. And so far, they all are in the category of what I call demoware, meaning you can very easily find a little thing that you can show to somebody else that would impress them, but you're not going to be using it tomorrow because it wasn't really that useful overall. Yeah, everybody's got just the demo, not really using it. Now, the exceptions would be, you know, some students and writers and lawyers, you know, find it to help them out. But you still have to check its work. I had to do some things that it told me it did, and it was just making it up. So if it can't tell you what's true, and it definitely can't do that, and it doesn't look like we're going to be able to upgrade it to do it, if it can only give you woke answers like, well, some people say this and some people say that, I don't think it'll ever be good for information, weirdly, which you'd think would be its big thing. And we don't seem to be interested in connecting it to other apps, because if you told me I could just talk to my phone and tell it to send a message, because, you know, I don't want to say the word S-I-R-I, you talk to your phone, but that's just a mess. I mean, Apple is just garbage on voice recognition compared to AI. So if it just fixed my interface, it would be amazing. But I think we don't want to give the AI that much power that it can interact with your other apps. So if that doesn't change, I don't know how much good it's going to be in the long run. We cannot predict what AI will be, but don't confuse it with the super intelligence. I don't think we know how to get there.
Ultimately, AI is just a series of algorithms, though. It's not really intelligence.
Well, are you ready for this?
Yes.
Neither are we. let me put some things. As a hypnotist, your audience may remember or know that I'm a trained hypnotist, something I learned in my 20s. And part of what you learn is that everything you've learned before that was upside down. And you can't really do hypnosis till you understand this, that we are not rational creatures who sometimes get irrational, you know, if we're too emotional or something. Nothing like that. That's the common way ordinary people see the world. Hypnotists see us as irrational all the time. And except for the most trivial things like, you know, knowing what link to click to create our interview here, those are rational, but those are trivial. For all the big stuff, like where do you work? Who do you marry? What do you do in your free time? All that stuff is irrational first. And then we cover it over with some rational argument that other people go, Okay, well, I'm not even sure how that makes sense, but if you're happy with it, I'm happy with it. So if you understand everybody's irrational, you also realize that, and then you also watch how people's opinions are assigned to them by the news they watch, because you'll see them repeat the same phrases exactly as the host said on the news. You put that together, and you can see that we are, as humans, basically just looking at patterns in the words in our head, because our intelligence is sort of word-based. Some people say that they don't have the conversation in their head. Maybe they have a visual-based system, sort of like the self-driving Tesla. So your Tesla has AI from visual stuff, and then the regular LLMs have AI from words, but they're both just patterns. Yeah. So I don't think the human brain is anything but a pattern generator exactly like LLMs. Now, consciousness is a different question. But intelligence, yes, has the same intelligence we have, which is very flawed. We see patterns where we shouldn't have seen one. That's our problem.
Let's talk about that pattern recognition for a moment, Scott. You took a hell of a beating during that vaccine phase. I remember how you were just getting lambasted left, right, and center, and I couldn't quite follow what it was all about.
It was a hoax.
Yeah. So the point that I'm making is that a lot of people got these injections based on pattern recognition.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So they said, well, the experts say it's true. The experts are who I've lived, you know, in the past, they've been right. Yeah. Pattern recognition was your downfall during the pandemic, for sure. But then there were other people who said, my pattern recognition says everything the government does is wrong and bad for me. So if it came from the government and it does look rushed, so that's like the worst possible case. I won't put it in my body. Now, other people like me said, unfortunately, I have a educational background which allows me to look at and analyze situations, which most people don't have. And most people believe they do have it. It's sort of the Dunning-Kruger effect. Most people think they can look at a complicated situation and just use their so-called common sense to common sense their way through to the good result. There's nothing like that. There's no such thing as common sense. That's like willpower. These are imaginary concepts. But people who are trained, and I've got a background in economics, I've got an MBA, you know, worked with engineers for my first 16 years of work. So I'm sort of spring-loaded to make sure I've looked at both sides of issues. So you get all the costs and all the benefits. But normies don't do that. They kind of take the first shining fruit and say, well, here's why I decided. Look at the shining fruit. In the case of the vaccinations, the shining fruit for some people was, are you kidding? This comes from the government. Everything they do is bad. Don't get that near me. So that was their shining fruit. But here's the thing they left out. At that time, there was strong suspicion that the virus itself was weaponized. It was designed to kill you. So I think the people who said the vaccination is a bad risk because it comes from the government turned out to be completely right about that part. What they didn't know was whether the virus could have been reduced in any way, and was it more deadly than we knew because it was engineered to be perhaps more deadly than we knew. So the way I looked at it was you can't tell the risk of not getting it, and you also can't tell the risk of getting it. But both of them are really risky.
So which way do you go?
Which way do you go? So I ended up just putting it off as long as possible so I could see who died before me. So I basically I basically just hid for, you know, 9 months or so after the vaccination was available. You know, given my age, I could have, you know, moved myself up the list. But I was like, you know, I'm happy to wait. Seems like a long line. I see a lot of you are very eager, and I was able to isolate a little better because I work at home. So I thought, yeah, I'll just wait. But then I had an opportunity to do some amazing overseas travel, and to do that, I needed to have a vaccination. And I was in the category that even today, the experts say I was better off statistically because I had a comorbidity of asthma, and I was over 60. Now, of course, all those numbers are disputed. There's a large group in the United States who says, I've looked at every study and everyone says it was bad for you in every way. and then the experts will say, well, that's not true. It definitely worked for old people, at least during the early phase. Omicron was a whole different animal. But they would say, yeah, it saved a bunch of people. Now, you ask me, which of those is true? How would I know? There's no way to know. All I know is I seem to be perfectly healthy, and I went on two amazing vacations that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise. So,
yeah, I think there is a lot of sensation and hysteria in all things, and it doesn't only apply to vaccination. It applies to anything, really, if you think about it. Ultimately, how do you know? I guess with some people, Scott, perhaps it's a case of that little voice in my head, or it's as Gavin De Becker says in his book, The Gift of Fear, He says intuition sometimes is a very, very good guide. Do you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. That thing that makes you feel fear is often telling you something useful. Now, but you don't want to overextend that, because if it's not something that'll kill you, that same sense of, oh, I don't want to give that speech in front of that crowd, or I don't want to ask that person out or ask for that job, that's just holding you back. Those are the fears you should say, yep, that's scary. Do it anyway. Yep.
Yeah.
That would really embarrass me if it went wrong. Do it anyway. So it's the do it anyway thing that you need to get for career success and life success. But yeah, he's right. If it's, I'm not sure this neighborhood is safe, you should pay attention to that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I live in South Africa, one of the most violent countries in the world. So, I mean, I understand how fear works.
Have you ever thought of just getting the F out of there?
When you and I last spoke, Scott, you were telling me how you called correctly Trump. Now, a lot has happened since then, and it kind of looks like Trump's got it in the bag. Although, if the establishment has its way, he won't. Well, what do you see happening now with the United States?
Have I mentioned this? you know that Gavin De Becker thing where you've got this bad feeling? it feels like the election will be rigged. Let me say it as directly as I can. The sense I have that the Gavin De Becker, like there's this fear based on things you can't prove. I don't have a science or a study. But once you understand the, let's say, the architecture of the thing, when you understand the design of the system that you're in, it may only be able to produce one kind of output, because a specific design doesn't give you every kind of output potential. It's limited. That's what a design does. It limits the output. I worry that we're the people who want to have control and want to make sure a populist president doesn't come back into office, they may have too much influence over our news, our lawmaking around the election itself, and law enforcement, ultimately, the Department of Justice, et cetera, that I think they've created a Trump is Hitler feeling where everybody feels they can break the law. I don't know if you saw the story about the NPR editor who admitted that the NPR during Trump turned from being something like a news organization to something that they all understood was trying to stop Trump.
Sure.
And now just imagine that. That's actually admission from somebody who was there, an editor, doesn't really have an axe to grind. He just wants us to know that they had 87 Democrat editors and no Republicans, and that even in their conversations, it was about stopping Trump and damaging his odds, and it was not about the news. Now, to imagine that only happened in NPR would be really naive. It looks like it happened everywhere. And that means that the narrative of Trump is Hitler is all you needed for everybody to act in a certain way.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And the narrative Trump is Hitler is coming from the big blob. It's coming from dark places. It's not coming because everybody had that idea at the same place. That's an assigned opinion.
Mm.
You can easily imagine. Remember when he first ran? Everybody said he was a clown.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just in it for the publicity. He's a big old clown. He's a narcissist. And then it turned to Hitler. It turned to Hitler. Like he had 70 some years in the public life, loved by all groups, involved in all manner of like charitable, diversity related things. Not a problem. But suddenly, as soon as he's running for president, and by the way, the policies that got him labeled as Hitler are now commonly understood by Democrats as good ideas, like closing the border. So I don't think the CNN came up with he's Hitler. Like I feel like it was coming from another handler, if you will, and everybody sort of fell in line after a while.
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, as an outsider looking in, whether we like it or not, the United States still drives international everything.
And sorry about that.
And Trump has his blind spots, but I still think he's better than anything else that you've got going in the offering.
Yeah, the thing I worry about is that a lot of what our country does, the United States, it looks like it's all designed to raise profits for people who make money from wars. Like from the outside, if you were just going to analyze it dispassionately, you came from another planet, you go, okay, what's the design of this system? Oh, I see. It looks like it's designed to make money by generating fake wars that we didn't need. And then all the people who really make money. Because here's the problem is, nobody gets really rich without the government's help. That's just a sad truth, whether you're a social media platform or a military person or anything. You know, if the government isn't on your side, it doesn't get that big. Just the really big things always has some government connection to it. So that makes it look like it's all a money-making scheme with a pretense of this democracy republic thing, which has been fake, I think, since the 60s, probably.
You spoke about the CIA in your drawing earlier, and it reminded me of Robert Kennedy, who's running now, I think, as an independent, and his own family, obviously, as we all know, were part of the presidency, and JFK famously wanted to dissolve the CIA, and look what happened to him.
Yeah, I'm not sure we'll ever know what happened, but every indication is that was an inside job. Now, I would extend that to, in America, we've got this big problem of fentanyl coming across the border, and we also have suspiciously open borders that don't even make sense because the public doesn't want it. Now, here's how I explain it, if you explain it in this, this blob form. We do have pretty good information that our intelligence people are associated with the cartels, because the cartels have so much influence in our hemisphere, in the other countries, that if we want to influence the government of another country, it's good to be in bed with the cartel, because they're the ones who can get that country to do something. So it looks to me that the fentanyl business and the trafficking from the cartels is what we're giving them so that they will give us some influence over those other governments. So I think that even fentanyl and the open borders are an inside job, probably intelligence driven, and probably as a gift to the cartels. Well, not a gift. It would be we'll give you this if you give us that. So it looks like just cartel and the intelligence people are working together, because nothing else explains it. If you try to explain anything our public figures say in public about why it is the way it is, or why we haven't been more aggressive with fentanyl when we know it's the cartels, nothing makes sense unless they're on our team. So I just gave up imagining that it's anything else, because maybe sometimes it's just the obvious.
Looking ahead, the next few years, maybe a few decades, are you seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, or is that light a train coming towards us?
One of the greatest things about being my age is that I've been through so many this is the end, finally. I remember when I was young and the so-called hippies were protesting the war, and we were pretty sure that was the end of civilization right there. Not only that, but those dirty hippies, how are they ever going to hold a job, for God's sakes? By the time you fast forward to 2024, we'll have nothing but dirty hippies who didn't go to school and don't want the republic, and we're all dead. And by the way, in the 70s, we're going to have peak oil, and all our oil is gone. And did I tell you about the ozone? And by the way, the icebergs are going to increase, not decrease, and it's going to kill us. And I also grew up in the Soviet Union is going to nuke us any minute. Like I actually had a nuclear bomb shelter in my house. Now, to be fair, my father was not an expert on radiation. he hadn't quite figured out that just having some cinder blocks in the way wasn't going to completely protect us. But, that was the era that we lived in. So I've never lived in a time in my 60 plus years that didn't have, you're all going to be dead pretty soon, and here's why. So,
so basically, it's all relative.
Yeah, I think it's more of that, and I think the odds of AI, you know, creating a utopia are far greater than we'll all be dead. But it is risk. I mean, AI is absolutely risk. But if you had to say which is, you know, more likely, I think we're more likely working toward a time when things will be easier than harder.
I quite like what you're saying, because there's a lot of negativity, a lot of nihilism, a lot of black pill sort of cynicism around us. And I do appreciate a little bit of white pill thinking, a bit of positivity, optimism.
Well, let me put it in a way that's easy to see and remember it. I call it the Adams Law of Slow-Moving Disasters. And what that means is, if we can see some horrible humanity problem coming, our track record of thwarting it is 100% because we're still here. So at first, we were going to overpopulate. Well, it turns out we did so well in avoiding that, we might be underpopulating. You know, we're going to run out of oil. You know, you name it. Everything that was going to be a problem, from the ozone, I think I mentioned most of them. And I think it's just going to be more of that. I think we will see big problems coming. We'll yak about it more than we ever did because we have social media now, and that gives, there are more people yakking about more things. So it looks like there's more problems. But I do think there's also a mass incompetence problem in the country, but we'll probably work through that as well.
Do you think there are more problems, or we're just amplifying the ones that are there?
It may be there's more complexity. It might be that we're just aware of things, like you're aware of the rot in your own government in a way I wasn't aware of my whole life. Mm. So it's partly complexity, partly noticing it, but I don't think it's outside the realm of we can fix. The only thing that does scare me is the national debt. Most of the time I say to myself, well, I don't know how it will be solved, but I can easily sort of conceive of several ways it could be solved. You know, like climate change, I don't know how it will be solved or if it will be solved, but you can imagine a whole bunch of scenarios, from, you know, fusion energy to sucking it out of the air or whatever. But when we talk about the debt, I don't know how that's fixable because the numbers don't work. I think we will. I mean, I think we'll survive it, but that's a weird one. It's the only one where I can't even think of a solution. I mean, I end up going to fully speculative things like, well, maybe that's the reason we need a digital currency, because they will somehow disappear $35 billion worth of debt and give you some digital currency in its place. Hey, we paid you back. Here's your $35 trillion. But it's digital. It's not dollars anymore. Now, is there some like magic sleight of hand where you can make $35 trillion of debt go away?
You can't.
I don't know. If you added, you can inflate it away if you didn't increase it, but we're increasing it greater than the rate of inflation. So it could be that, you know, powerful people have decided they're just going to massively grow and inflate it away somehow. I don't know. So, but I can't think of any coherent, rational way to do it.
Other than a collapse.
The thing is that small things can collapse, but big things don't. You know, the reason why some companies are too big to fail is because they're too big to fail. The United States is alone in not being like anything else. So if the United States collapsed with its big military, there are a lot of people who don't want that to happen. So let's say if China, for example, decided to, you know, never buy American debt again, well, we'd probably collapse. But they don't want that. They need a market.
It's not likely.
So it could be that that because everybody would be worse off if America's economy collapsed, that everybody will simply pretend that it's not. And economics is mostly psychology.
Yeah.
So if I say, I'm going to give you this piece of paper, but don't worry, it's backed by the, you know, the faith and credit of the United States, that's psychology. You didn't give me a damn thing except, you know, an idea on a piece of paper. Mm. So since the entire economy is about how we think about stuff, is there a way to change how we think about stuff that has any impact on the debt? I don't know. So that one scares me.
All right. Well, on that note, Scott, I'm worried that I can't find Dilbert in newspapers anymore, and I'm worried that I can't find Dilbert books or your books on Amazon anymore. Where can I go?
If you go to Dilbert.com, it's got the pointers to everything. So I'll have mostly for America right now. We'll work on other English-speaking countries. But if you can buy an American book on Amazon, you can get my two latest, Reframe Your Brain and How to Fail in Almost Everything, Still Win Big second edition. I've got the God's Debris, will turn into a trilogy. Win Bigly will be reissued in late summer. And the comic is behind paywalls. $3 a month on the X platform. Just look for my profile and click on the link. Or on Locals, where I've got a whole community where we do lots more videos and other comics and stuff. So that's called scottadams.locals.com. Thanks for asking.
Scott Adams, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportgerm.com.